Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast. This is your host, Matt Shook, and this is the episode for Monday, November 27th. I'm taping this actually late on Friday night, early Saturday morning to be exact, after the Pistons earned a 99-98 win on the road against the Oklahoma City Thunder. Another solid win for Detroit, which moves them to 12-6 on the season. They are currently slotted as the number two seed in the East, just ahead of Cleveland, like we all expected at this point in the season, of course. That could change over the weekend a little bit with the jockeying for position, but that's where it stands right now. As like I said, I'm taping this after the Thunder game. I know a couple days in advance of when the podcast will publish, but just wanted to give a heads up that if something breaks or develops on Saturday or Sunday, I likely will not be updating this podcast unless it's something really big, and then I'll jump on because I'm going to be traveling over the next few days. Reason is my grandfather actually passed away Thursday on Thanksgiving afternoon, so I'm headed down to Florida to pay my respects and be with my grandmother and my father and the rest of the family as well. It's something that we've all been through, losing a loved one. I know that you've all been there, but if you'll indulge me for a second, I want to talk about my grandpa. He spent much of his retirement years in Florida, but this guy, he was all Michigan, Charles Shook. He grew up in Romeo, graduated with degrees from Alma College in Western Michigan, and I thought it was always big of me that I never held that against him, that he went to Western too much. So big of me to leave that one alone as much as possible. He served in the Army and went on to a long career as an educator. He was a teacher and then a principal in Rochester Hills Schools for many years. He was actually the first principal at Meadowbrook Elementary, which opened in 1959, and he served there with the kids for 20 years. The last time that he was in Michigan was last fall, and I actually accompanied him on a trip to Meadowbrook School in the middle of a school day, and my grandfather, he just loved it. And first of all, shout out to those fourth graders who were in the classroom that he visited that day. The teacher was an old Meadowbrook student of his who was retiring actually last year, and she was so happy to see Mr. Shook completely unannounced in the middle of the day to anyone at school. We just showed up, talked to the current principal, and he said, yeah, go ahead, take a tour, and we ended up in a fourth grade classroom talking directly to the kids. So my grandpa went in, talked to the kids in that class, and said a few adorable grandfatherly but also wise things, and bless those kids' hearts. They were very engaged with him and treated this old stranger very warmly. And at the time, I thought, wow, man, Rochester, they got some special fourth graders that they responded to him that way. That's not really how I pictured those that kind of interaction going this day and age. But looking back now, I think I'm realizing more that the special 10-minute bond was more of a two-way street between some neat kids, sure, and an engaging and wise, funny, brilliant man who always had a way with people, especially young people. He always soaked up the moments late in life, and being his grandson and being around him whenever I could, I always felt how much he loved being around his family members. And there's a lesson in that, of course. The other lesson that he gave us was the one everyone talks about when they talk about my grandpa. He was kind and he was warm, and there was simply no doubting that. I can't imagine that there was anyone who ever met him who didn't like him, at least the guy I knew in his final third of his life. But I come across people every day on Twitter, in my day job, or covering pro sports, college, high school, youth sports, and man, we just kind of need to be better to each other, don't we? I'm talking about neighborhoods and in a global sense. It never hurts to be kind and warm to a stranger. Say hi, make eye contact when you come across someone, have empathy for everyone's situations in life, and not be so angry all the time. So that's the main lessons I'm going to take from my grandfather, who loved Michigan football and still watched the Lions and Tigers whenever he could from Florida. You will be missed, sir. Thanks for being such a great and loving role model for our family. And listeners, thanks for allowing me the time to do that. And we're going to be talking more about the Pistons today, the rundown, the Oklahoma City game from Friday night, and also talk about the interesting post-game comments that Stan Van Gundy made about Stanley Johnson, and also look ahead to Monday's game against the Boston Celtics as well. And I can't think of any better segue than going into draft.com, which has Draft Wednesday coming up through draft.com and also the Draft app, which you can find on your iPhone and Android and anywhere else. Use the promo code LOPISTONS, all capital letters, and you get $3 free into your account, which is the amount that it costs to get into our Locked On Pistons contest each Wednesday. And what do you know? The Pistons are playing on Wednesday at home. They got lowly Phoenix at Little Caesars Arena, so you can get those Pistons on your team for that draft. Last week we filled the big draft up, and we even had a smaller one as well of overflow. So get on there and find me. My handle is Matt Shook, all one word, MattSchoch, and I'll invite you into the Wednesday Locked On Pistons draft. So go ahead and do that and support the podcast. We'd really appreciate it. But I wanted to run down the schedule of the podcast for the next few days. Like I said, I'll be traveling in Florida. So after today, we're going to have the Tuesday podcast, which is actually going to be mostly just the Locked On Celtics podcast. John Corrales and Sam Packard agreed to help us out. They're going to send us their episode for Tuesday after Monday night's game against Boston, so we can kind of get the outsider's perspective of the Pistons and also some of the former Pistons that play with the Celtics. And if you're an optimistic Pistons fan, you're thinking that maybe we're going to see that team and maybe have a nice competitive playoff series with that team, maybe even this season, maybe down the line as well. So a team that everyone in NBA circles and maybe the Pistons need to be familiar with as well. So we'll be running that for Tuesday's podcast. I'll jump on at the beginning to throw a little intro in as well with some quick thoughts from the Sunshine State. And then on Wednesday, the Locked On Suns guys will be helping us out. The Pistons are playing Phoenix on Wednesday night, so Brendan Kleen and Evan Sidery will be looking ahead to the Pistons game against the Suns on Wednesday night. So they're going to be talking about their teams mostly. It's their podcast, but I've asked them to kind of give some perspective on the Pistons a little more than usual. So you can kind of be exposed to a little bit more of the Locked On Network, which is a good thing as well. You should be listening to the Locked On Lions podcast for sure with Matt Derry, but there's other teams. Every NBA team and every NFL team has their own podcast. So maybe get familiar with some of the opponents and rivals, or maybe you're from Oklahoma but you live in Michigan, or you're from New York but you live in Phoenix. So, you know, do some cross listening of some of the other podcasts. So that's the plan. I think that's going to be a nice little treat, a little outside the box kind of thing for the listeners as well. And thanks to those guys, of course, for helping us out. I should be back for Thursday's podcast. And also, like I said, I'll be throwing little intros onto the other podcasts as well. And I'll jump in if something big happens, and we'll be back with you guys as quickly as I can. So thanks for your patience through this week, and I appreciate everyone staying on board with us, even though it's going to be a little bit of an irregular kind of time. But we're going to talk a little bit more about the Oklahoma City win with some interesting comments from Coach Stan Van Gundy about Stanley Johnson. But hey, if your company is interested in men between the ages of 18 and 44, Locked On Pistons is the place for you. Your company should be sponsoring this podcast. Listening to this podcast is 98% men and 80% of listeners between the ages of 18 to 44. So if you want that men 18 to 44 group there, this is your spot. Plus, our rates are reasonable. So if you want to know more, you can email me at matt_schoch@yahoo.com to find out more.
Yes, sir!
Well, a little bit later on the show, we're going to be talking about the Boston Celtics. The Pistons' Monday night opponent over in Beantown, Boston, is 17-3 entering Saturday night's game in Indiana. I don't know as of right now how that game's going to end up. They'll be either 18-3 or 17-4 heading into the Pistons game on Monday night. The Celtics are just coming off of a recently snapped 16-game winning streak despite losing free agent acquisition Gordon Hayward in the first quarter of the season. Brad Stevens has got that team as all the rage in the NBA in the early going. But the Pistons will be well rested after a kind of a week off, and then a light weekend with Friday night's game and then Monday night against Boston. But the Pistons have even more of a cushion in this tough stretch that they have here, where there will be underdogs for 7 of 8, including that Oklahoma City game on Friday night. A lot of tough games ahead still. But that tough win on Friday night in the Heartland was a big one. Andre Drummond had 17 points and 14 rebounds to lead the way. All five of the Detroit starters were in double digits in scoring, including a nice effort from Stanley Johnson, who had 11 points and 5 rebounds and played well in one of his best efforts of the season, maybe his first, second, or third best effort, comparing how you figured how he did in those first few games where he was playing pretty strongly before the injury sat him down for a little while. Off the bench, Ish Smith, 15 points. It's so early in the season, but dare I say, is Ish maybe a sixth man of the year candidate? Sometimes you have guys like, you know, Tobias Harris last year who came off the bench and played well for the Pistons. But those guys, those types are kind of starters that get pushed to the bench because of you know, the rotational alignment or because circumstances or maybe this guy fits better with this guy. But no denying that a Tobias Harris last year was certainly one of the five best Pistons throughout the season. And I think Manu Ginobili of the Spurs in the past and, you know, during his prime sometimes was like that, where we could get him with the second unit and kind of push him to the bench and maybe that'll be a spark plug. But Ish is not like one of those kind of guys. He's just a bench guy through and through. And he kind of represents that change of pace that you hope your super subs bring. And he's been that and more this year. And we'll talk about Ish a little bit more in future episodes. What a strong season he's having so far. But maybe sixth man of the year. Maybe we'll get that campaign going on Twitter and in the media. But that's just a thought and something to keep an eye on going forward. Speaking of that bench, another nice game from AT, Anthony Tolliver, and some big threes early in the fourth quarter from Langston Galloway on, I believe, consecutive possessions against Oklahoma City to tie the game up eventually from that 15-point deficit the Pistons had in the third quarter. Russell Westbrook, the reigning MVP, still got his triple-double, so I guess he's still the MVP in some people's eyes, but as I roll my eyes when I say that. He had 27 points, 11 rebounds, and 11 assists in the game. He was 1 of 10 from three-point land, as Stan Van Gundy says hallelujah every time he throws one of those up. So I thought it was a hilarious clip from that Golden State game on Wednesday night, the night before Christmas, when Westbrook had 9 assists and was going for the triple-double, threw one to Steven Adams, who was in the middle of the key, and was covered. He certainly could have maybe tried to put a move on the defender, but actually passed opposite to a wide-open player in the corner for a three-pointer there with the game kind of in hand. But you could hear Russell audibly yelling at Steven Adams after he passed the ball to shoot the ball. And it was obvious that he was just trying to get that triple-double. And it was even funnier that Steph Curry and Kevin Durant were on the bench at that point as the game was in hand, but they kind of started cracking up when they saw the whole thing develop. So anyway, as a Westbrook hater myself, that was kind of a nice little thing. You can find that on Twitter. I tweeted it on Wednesday night as well. But Westbrook, fittingly, he had a chance to win on Friday night against the Pistons with a late heave at the buzzer, but it missed, and the Thunder blew another big double-digit lead. That's kind of been their thing so far this year. I believe they're now like 8-10, but have blown a bunch of those big double-digit leads. This time they had that 15-point margin in the third quarter and could not get it done against the red-hot Detroit Pistons. But I wanted to talk about a quote that James Edwards III of The Athletic, friend of the pod, passed along after the game. He said that he's going to be writing about Stanley Johnson on Saturday, so you want to check that out. I haven't obviously had a chance to read that yet because it's just now in the early morning hours of Saturday, so he has not published that yet. But he published on Twitter this quote from Stan Van Johnson, or Stan Van Johnson, that's great. I'll put that one in the blooper reel, but from Stan Van Gundy about Stanley Johnson. So those guys couldn't be more opposite, I guess. But anyway, here's the quote from Stan Van Gundy about Stanley Johnson. He says, "Stanley, it's been strange. So the first four games of the year, he didn't play well, and I was sort of not real high on him at that point. And then he played a great game at home against Minnesota and went out and played really well against the Clippers and the Warriors. Since he's come back off of the injuries, I talked to him at practice on Wednesday, and I just said, look, I haven't said much to you. You've been back three games. It takes time, but we need more. I was getting to that point where we got to get something out of him or find something else. And he went out and played a really good game." First of all, refreshing honesty from the coach of the Pistons, Stan Van Gundy, who's always been like that. We talked about him last week in a podcast about how you're always going to hear Stan Van Gundy's true thoughts and true opinions about things, and he kind of let loose on Stanley Johnson there, not in a vicious way, but pointed out some things that I've been noticing, and I think if you've been watching the Pistons games, you've probably been noticing as well. He shot dreadfully in that opener against Charlotte, and I think that's maybe one of the headlines of his season, but you know, we can look past that. We know that we don't rely on Stanley Johnson to be a game-in and game-out big-time scorer or anything like that, but he got the jump shot together a little bit after that, had some nice games where he kind of maybe fed off those jumpers going down a little bit. The embarrassment of going 0-for-13 in the opener might have got to him a little bit, but seemed like he played a lot better defense when he was getting into a little bit more of an offensive rhythm. And that's what happened again tonight, as I think he knocked down three-pointers, had 11 points, and was in a rhythm offensively and played well defensively as well. But I think with something you notice with Stanley, and this has the makings of a little bit of a lazy narrative, which, you know, kind of was the Andre Drummond narrative from last year, that he didn't really seem engaged and didn't have the energy level throughout the 48 minutes of the game. I think that Stanley Johnson in some ways is like that too. I think he's an emotional guy like Reggie Jackson is. Reggie Jackson, to his credit, has found ways on many nights, probably more nights than not, to harness that in good ways. He's fearless, obviously, so he's able to shoot the ball and shoot the ball well in the fourth quarter and on late shot clock opportunities. Stanley Johnson's got to find a way to harness his emotions and be completely engaged in the game. I mean, sometimes it seems like he's a little bit separate from the team at times. And I'm trying to put my finger on it as the season goes on, and I'm watching this team a lot more closely this year than I have in the past. I watched them closely before, but doing this podcast, obviously I'm watching every game and watching as much as I can, replays and body language and those kind of things, because we're trying to get a grasp on what this team is and where they're at. And I know that, again, we don't want to get too narrative-driven, but there is something to be said for some of these things as the season progresses. We know that Stan Van Gundy and Stanley Johnson had a bit of a rocky second year in their partnership last year. There's no secret about that. And Stanley Johnson has not been nearly the offensive player that the Pistons had hoped for when they drafted him 3 years ago. So he's developing as a defensive player. But some nights it's just not there. He walks around the court a lot. He doesn't seem to be as engaged with some of the other starters and core players as they are to each other, you know, Andre Drummond and Reggie Jackson, for instance. Whereas when you look at Tobias Harris and Avery Bradley, you don't really think about these kind of things as much, because Tobias Harris is a strong offensive player who's going to get his things done offensively and going to be a pretty good defensive player and pretty professional as far as his attitude and energy every game. I don't think that's ever been an issue with Tobias Harris, whether he brings the right attitude or the right energy into games, especially given the fact that Stanley Johnson's game, which is more defensive, relies more on energy than maybe a Tobias Harris, who's more of a finesse skill type player. Avery Bradley, even though he's still a young player himself, is kind of a veteran presence on this team already. And he's going to bring 100% max effort on defense. I mean, obviously anyone around the NBA or who's been watching the Detroit Pistons this year knows about that. So Avery Bradley is not in that same category as Stanley Johnson, where you need to worry about whether he's going to be engaged or not. And it's just interesting to hear Stan Van Gundy come out and kind of say those kind of things. He didn't use the word engaged. He didn't use the word effort, but kind of implying those things with that quote that I read from James Edwards III of The Athletic. So an interesting subplot to think about going forward, and it's one player on one team, but when you think about the small forward position for the Pistons, it's their weakest position. They have four starters in Harris, Bradley, Drummond, and Jackson, who look like they're kind of here to stay as far as the core of this team for this year. Now, Stanley Johnson's still under contract for this season and another after that. He's a candidate for a big contract extension this summer, but when you look at the makeup of this roster, the assets available, Johnson's kind of the one guy who stands out as up in the air as far as his future with the team. What kind of trade value would he have right now? Anyways, he's got the low rookie contract, which is nice for another year and a half or so, but then you got to pay him if you're going to keep him around long term. Is he a guy that you could somehow attach to a Boban or Lure to dump those guys, although the value of those guys is down so much right now that you need some sort of production before you want to pull the trigger on getting rid of those guys for those contracts? Or, as I mentioned before, is this a situation where you can attach a first-round draft pick of next year to Stanley or to one of those other players to kind of use as an enticement to get rid of those dumps if you want to keep around Avery Bradley this summer, Tobias Harris next summer? These are the type of contract salary cap decisions that the Pistons will have to make. And maybe you can package the pick, Stanley, and keep away those bad contracts and try to upgrade that small forward position somehow. Maybe and I know Paul George is a type of player like that, is not the type of player I'm talking about, because that's a pipe dream. It's a little bit out of the Pistons. When you're talking about those kind of assets, you wouldn't be able to get the kind of player like that. But the situation where Paul George was on a dead-end franchise with Indiana and Oklahoma City was able to get him for, you know, nickels on the dollar, maybe that type of move is something that the Pistons can look at maybe at this trade deadline if you're really bullish on how this Pistons team could do in the Eastern Conference playoffs this year, or maybe this summer going forward, that the trade candidate possibilities. But the Stan Van Gundy, Stanley Johnson dynamic is something that fascinates me, especially when you think about the fact that Van Gundy was the president of the team who drafted him. So he's kind of responsible for him, his success and failure at some point. And I think it's obvious we can all say, even the biggest Stanley Johnson supporters can say that his first 2 years were a disappointment, a big disappointment, and need a lot more from him going forward. So just an interesting thing that I'm keeping my eye on, and I want to hear your feedback. So reach out to me on Twitter if I'm way off base or if you think I'm not seeing something that Stanley's doing really well. I know the defensive numbers are good and the defensive effort is generally there for him, and he's a valuable part of a strong defensive team. But, you know, night in and night out, are we seeing the type of effort that we're hoping in from him in a big third year where he's got a lot to prove? But speaking of that, I'll have another chance to prove some things against some great players and some former teammates against the Boston Celtics on Monday night, and we're going to get into those Eastern Conference leading C's a little bit later as well. And we got the Boston Celtics coming up on Monday night, taking on the Detroit Pistons in Beantown. The very familiar team in a lot of ways for the Pistons, as a couple of former mates from last year's team are suiting up in the green this year, as Marcus Morris was traded in the offseason for Avery Bradley. And it was a kind of a salary dump by Boston, as they didn't want to attach themselves to Avery Bradley in the long term, which is something that the Pistons are hoping to do this summer, I would imagine. Marcus Morris had a very reasonable contract that was picked up by Stan Van Gundy in a trade with Phoenix, and then he moved it along so we could upgrade the talent level a little bit from KCP, Caldwell Pope, at the shooting guard position, but Morris was kind of the casualty of that. He's a tough guy, we all know that, and he's a strong player and has been strong for Boston, as has Aaron Baines, who was the backup center in Detroit for a couple years. Did a good job there, but kind of banked on himself in free agency and held on a little bit as the summer went on and was one of the late additions for the Celtics. And he's been good, helping out a rebounding on a team that really needed some help underneath, especially defensive rebounding. Kyrie Irving was picked up in the big trade with the Cleveland Cavaliers in the offseason, unusual for two championship contenders like that to make a big deal with Isaiah Thomas going over to Cleveland, who was huge for the Celtics last year, scoring about 30 points a game. But Kyrie's moved over. He's been a great facilitator for them, scoring around 20 points a game, but doing a lot of things and stepping things up defensively, especially as Gordon Hayward has missed all but a few minutes of the season so far. Al Horford plays inside. He's from Grand Ledge. We know the Michigan guy who played for the University of Florida, won some championships for Billy Donovan down there. Horford's having a great year as kind of a high post guy who is a great glue guy and someone beloved by the Boston fans as well. And a couple of young, exciting players. Jaylen Brown is in his second year with the Celtics and is becoming more of an offensive force in addition to his defensive capabilities as well. And rookie Jason Tatum from St. Louis was the third pick of the draft this year. The Celtics traded down with Philadelphia to acquire the third pick after having the first pick originally and went with the Duke freshman Jason Tatum, who's, I think he's 19 years old, and he's just really surpassed expectations. I saw him play a little bit in high school for Chaminade, and he was real strong for them in St. Louis and went ahead and had a great season for Duke last year, and is a long player who's a very, you know, causes a lot of problems for defenses and has a developing offensive game that's already pretty mature. So the Pistons fans will get their first look at him. Coach Brad Stevens, of course, if you know anything about the NBA, you know how much the nerds love to talk about how he's the best coach of all time. And he's a great coach, obviously, but people love to drool over the former Butler coach and what he's been able to do in his short time in the NBA as well. So that's the Boston Celtics, the familiar faces and the players you need to be looking out for. It's another bit of a national spotlight if you might have the two best records in the Eastern Conference going after each other head-to-head there. So another test game for the Pistons, another are-they-ready kind of game after a week before at home against Little Caesars Arena in LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers. They kind of fell flat on their face, although you got to give credit for Cleveland how great they played, especially LeBron in that first quarter and the whole team for the first half, how they shot the ball. And will Boston be as prepared like that? We'll see. They're going to be playing for the third time in four games as they played Orlando on Friday. We'll be playing Indiana on Saturday and then the Pistons on Monday night. So maybe the Pistons will catch Boston and get a little schedule win of their own. But again, Coming up after that, you got Phoenix at home on Wednesday, and then some Washington, some Milwaukee, some San Antonio, Golden State coming here to Detroit. Just a lot of tough games ahead for the Pistons as well. But you got Draft Wednesday coming up on Wednesday, too. The Pistons will be hosting the Phoenix Suns, and you can join us on draft.com or also on the Draft app. Use LO Pistons to sign up with us. Follow me at Twitter or at handle Matt Shook, one word, Matt, S-C-H-O-C-H after that. And I will invite you into the draft, which will be about an hour before the games start on Wednesday. I'll try to set that up on Tuesday, about the middle of the day, so we can put out as much advance notice as well. Follow me on Twitter at Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H as well. Again, I want to thank the listeners for their patience with me this week, as I've got some traveling and some family responsibilities, and looking forward to spending some time with them. So I want to thank you for your patience in allowing me to do that. We'll be back with you as soon as we can, and hopefully talking about another Pistons win on Monday night against the Celtics, and then on Wednesday night against Phoenix as well. So thanks again for listening, everyone, and have a good start to the week.